What we didn't do is sit there and feel sorry for ourselves. I built it all bootstrapping it, and it was my name on the line. And so I got up and laced my boots up every morning. I just did what had to be done.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Real Grit. I'm Neil Timmons. Hey, I'm here with Tim Herridge. Let me tell you a little about him. He's a professional real estate investor and an entrepreneur. For two decades now, he's been at the leading edge of our space. It includes being the founder of 2020 REI Group, founder and managing director of Blackstone's B2R Finance, founder of REI Expo, and a franchisee and development agent for Homevestors of America. He's completed well over, ready, $1 billion in real estate transactions. That's more than 2,000 houses in his 20-plus year career. He currently purchases and repositions about 50 homes a year out of Dallas, San Antonio, and the Denver markets. He's currently an executive director with RCN Capital. Tim built and sold 6 companies by the age of 40. He enjoys empowering entrepreneurs and investors like us, sharing raw truths and really the mistakes and the bumps that one goes through over one's career. So I'm excited to have him here. Tim, how are you?
I'm fantastic, Neil. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for taking the time to connect up here. You're a busy man with a deep experience in the career, and that's why I was so excited when we were able to get connected here. So thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Hey, you've been in 20 plus years. Tell me, what was the first entry point? How'd you even get into the industry?
My grandmother would have said, I cut my teeth on this business. My grandfather was a real estate broker. And when I got out of the Marine Corps, I just put my resume on a website called MilitaryHire.com. And a former Marine that was flipping houses in Dallas hired me as his project manager. That was how it began.
How long were you in that type of role for?
That was about 8 months.
Okay.
And then he taught me acquisitions. And I'll never forget, the first house I bought had a for rent sign nailed to the tree. And he said, we're going to buy this house. And I said, it says for rent, buddy. I'm not sure you get this whole thing. But after that, I went and I was a buyer for a Homevestor's office in Dallas. And then I became partners with a hard money lender. We started buying owner finance notes. And then I became a Homevestor's franchisee. And then I lived through the Great Recession and so on and so forth. Just one idea after another, just looking forward and trying to learn from my mistakes.
Yeah. Well, hey, thanks for your service. We sincerely appreciate it. It's good to hear. I'm excited about your attitude that you take relative to attacking problems and challenges. Did you have that before you went to the Corps, or is that something the Corps instilled in you?
I like to say I had it before the Corps, but honestly, if I had it, I didn't know about it. The Marine Corps is all about improvise, adapt, and overcome. It's one of the things that we say nonstop. It also says semper gumby, which just means always flexible, right? Because in combat and battle and strife and in business, you know, things don't always go the way you planned it, right? You can't just sit in a room and write it on the whiteboard and it becomes to fruition. You have to be flexible. And so I think the Marine Corps taught me some processes around that, taught me some real life experiences where being flexible and improvising, adapting, and overcoming created successes. And the old Michael Jordan thing, right? Like, you can't make the game winning shot without being willing to miss it type mentality.
Yeah. Fair to say, though, you've got to be flexible and adaptable. But at the end of the day, it is about the outcome. It's about achievement of the goal. I can imagine in a battlefield, it's about an end result. And in business, you know, if you're there to buy something, we've got to have an end result. How we get there can require some flexibility and adaptability along the way.
Yeah, I tell my son, I have a 21-year-old son. He's going to school to be a pilot at Oklahoma State University.
Great.
And I tell him all the time, I'm like, son, in our family, we move forward, right? And you have to have a destination. You have to be moving towards the destination. And it doesn't mean that you're not going to take a detour along the way. Doesn't mean you may get halfway there and turn around and decide that you're going, instead of Denver, we're all going to Michigan, right? Like, I mean, it doesn't mean that you can't make changes, but you just have to be moving forward. John Maxwell wrote a great book, Failing Forward, right? Just take another step, figure it out as you go.
Yep. Show up every day and go, right? Good things happen when you keep moving.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like anyone that tells me they've never lost money on a house, I'm like, nah, you're not trying hard enough, buddy, because I've lost 6 figures on a house and I've made 6 figures on more houses than I've lost 6 figures. And that's just the way I think about it.
Yeah. Talk to me about the Great Recession, you know, that 2008, 2009, 2010 era. There's a whole bunch of people, as you know, from this industry that never, you know, they've got in after that. There's a whole crop of people. And then I'm going to set this up to leading into some predictions about what we're faced with or what the world looks like at the current time. But what was that like for you? Where were you at in your business? And I guess talk to me a little about that.
Yeah, I was completely overexposed. 2006 I was the number one home investors franchise in the nation. In 2007, I was on pace to rehab, buy, close on, fix, and sell on FHA loans. We were pacing the 200 that year. We had done 143 when August hit of 07, and we had 38 vacant houses. And all of a sudden, all of the demand that was there for those houses just poof, gone. And I'm telling you, there's some dark days, late fourth quarter 07, early first quarter 08 was bad. And then it got worse in second quarter. We had banks calling notes due. And as we sit here today, we worked our way out of it. You talk about real grit. I mean, there were days that it was hard to get up out of bed and put my boots on and go to work, right? My wife and I are both in full-time real estate. She's a real estate broker. That's how we met. She sold me a house.
Okay.
So it got to where in 08, we went from, it's just not a brag story. It's actually a bad story. I was 27 years old before the Great Recession. I'm 43 today. And my wife and I were getting ready to move into this $1 million house. We were building it. Halfway done building it when the market collapsed, which was another fun story. But yeah, in 08, she had to go be a REO agent selling foreclosures just to make enough money to pay the note, right? I became a stay-at-home dad. We had an infant. I had to be at home because I don't even have a real estate license.
Right.
And so, you know, we did what it took, right? And it's really hard on a marriage when you're full-boated in real estate. And that's one of those things I worry about. I see a lot of husband-wife couples in our industry that they've all quit their day jobs and they're all in on real estate. And I wouldn't say that from a financial advisor standpoint, most of them would not tell you that was a good idea.
Need more leads? Who doesn't, right? Want access to the vacant home list, absentee owners, tax liens, pre-foreclosures that are all routinely updated? Well, you can get it all in one place. Batchleads.io. Batchleads gives you nationwide property search, nationwide buyer search, comparable home sales, quick filters, and hundreds of prospect filters to allow you to slice and dice it any which way you wish. Batch Leads is trusted by some of the nation's top real estate investors. And with plans starting as low as $30 a month, there's a lot of bang for the buck. Batch Leads includes unlimited list stacking, so there's never a need to buy another program or figure it out in Excel. They even include discounted skip tracing with every single plan. It's the system my team and I personally use. Use coupon code IMPACT when checking out for 50% off your first month. Batchleads.io, coupon code IMPACT for 50% off your first month.
Sure. How in the world did you make it through that mentally and emotionally? So many people just go, okay, got it. I'm done. I'm tapped out.
Yeah.
You're probably not an easy spot to be in. How in the world do you even get through it?
I'm a perpetual optimist. And I'm a networker. We went to work. We started owner financing properties instead of renting them out or selling them. I went to every big owner finance group in North Texas and just said, hey, what do the notes look like? What do I need to do? We called the banks and said, hey, listen, you know, this isn't going good. You know, can we miss a couple payments? Like what we didn't do is sit there and feel sorry for ourselves. I built it all bootstrapping it, and it was my name on the line. And so I got up and laced my boots up every morning. I just did what had to be done. And there were houses we had to evict people out of and then sell on owner finance notes. There were houses that we were able to sell for cash to some of the big investment groups that were coming in. It was swinging and ducking, right?
All right. So you make it away, you chip out of it and bring me current. We've had the greatest run probably in the history of property from the low in 2010 to where we're at today. I guess walk me through the last handful of years and where are you at now?
Yeah. So coming out of the recession, once I kind of got everything done, I started the REI Expo because I missed the networking of the Homevestors conventions. Missed the organization of it. And through that, I met some folks at Blackstone. And through that, I helped them found B2R Finance, which was in late 2013. when standardized investment financing for real estate investors just didn't really exist. So we created it and led that company for a couple of years. And then just, I grew it. I was proud of it, but I didn't want to do it full time anymore. So I resigned, left my permanent position, and started flipping houses here in Dallas again, because it's just been so fun. But with RCN Capital, through all of that, I became really good friends with Jeff Tesh, the CEO of RCN Capital. And Jeff and I just, we hit it off. He had a son here in Dallas going to college, and I was borrowing a bunch of money from him. It's always good to make friends when you owe him like $10 million, right? And so about a year and a half ago, he just said, "Tim, let's come on board. Help me grow this thing." And I said no. And we talked about it again a couple months later over barbecue, and I said no again. But one day I told him I was day trading, and he goes, "Oh, hell no. Come on, let's do this." And we did. And so it's been fun. RCN did $1 billion last year. We're going to do $2 billion this year.
Wow.
And my vision board in front of me says $5 billion, right? Like, that's where we're headed. Even with interest rates and property appreciation and all that jazz going on, we're not scared.
Yeah. Tell me, what the core business of RCN is what?
We finance single family, multifamily, and mixed use properties for fix and flip, ground up construction, and long-term rental loans.
Perfect. Long-term. How long is long-term?
30-year notes. We can do a 30-year fixed. A lot of people right now in the current rate environment are doing 5-year ARMs.
Yep.
That way they can kind of, you know, just maximize cash flow, yeah, betting that rates come back inside of where they are right now.
Yeah.
We got a lot of flexibility. I think we have a product for every investor.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about rates. And let's talk about some predictions. As we record this, it's just after tax day in April. And the 10-year treasury from December was about 150. I just looked before we got on. It's about a 284, 287. It opened this morning at 296. So it's fallen a little. The 2 year is about 255 plus or minus. It inverted for about a day or two, closed in an inverted basis about 2-3 weeks back. So the inversion would typically indicate we're on a precipice of a recession in a near term. But since then, that's kind of spread actually. But I want to hear from you. What's your position? You've lived and you were on the ground in 2008, as so many folks didn't live through all this. What are you seeing? And is this different? Is it similar? And maybe where do you think we're headed?
In my personal opinion, I'm not a financial advisor. I compare this nothing like 2008, because a couple of reasons. You still have financing available to buyers, and you still have more demand than you have supply. In Dallas, for instance, in 08, we were at 8 months of inventory available. Mm-hmm. It got close to 10 right at times. Right now, we have less than one, right? So if you just mathematically extrapolate, what would have to happen? And I am a fan of history, Neil. And so I went back last week and I looked at what happened from 1975 to 1985 when interest rates went to 20%.
Yep.
Real estate appreciated 160% in that time frame.
Right.
It did not have a down year until 1991, even after rates went way up and way down.
Right.
The Dow Jones in 1982, when we had, which is the period of inflation that everybody's saying we're now beating.
Yeah.
Between 82 and 85, the Dow Jones went up 47%, right? So I think people are confusing, rightfully so, I won't say because of ignorance, maybe just lack of education. I think they're confusing crisis with a crisis, right? We have a demand problem, right? We have the government, the U.S. government, many people who listen to these type of shows lean one way, but typically it's the other to blame. We put more money in 2020 into circulation than 18, 19, and 21. Like, 1 year in the last 4 years was bigger than the other three. Yeah. And so when you give that much money to people, they want to spend it. And if people aren't working, there's nothing to spend it on and no one to work. So what I think happened is we just went ahead and took the floor of replacement cost of everything from the cell phone to the home I'm sitting in, and we just shifted it. And I don't think it'll ever go down again. And I told Jason Hartman, a good friend of mine, I think that replacement comp cost right now is the low comp. In 08, people were pouring into the streets begging to work.
Correct.
It was a financial crisis.
Yep.
what we have right now is the Federal Reserve has realized they put way too much liquidity into the market. Yep. And all of us, and then they ignored it all last year when all the smart people were saying, hey, this is real inflation. They created the word, right? Transitory.
Transitory.
Let's make this word up. And now they go from 6 months ago when I was closing 30-year investment property loans at 3.5 to now I'm closing at 6.5, a 300 basis point swing. Because finally in December, they said, you know what? We were wrong. This isn't transitory. We're going to go ahead and start jacking rates up and stop buying paper and maybe even sell our paper, right? So they literally spent all year last year, the Federal Reserve, saying they weren't going to overreact. And then they've spent the last 2 months overreacting.
I'm going to hit on a couple of things there. You said they utilized the word transitory. And I recall sending an email to a friend of mine who she manages multiple billions of dollars in a portfolio for real estate and an insurance company. And we were conversing about this. And I said, just said at the time, there's no way this is transitory. This is absolutely, they pumped way too much money into this. The Fed has subsequently stopped utilizing the word transitory. I was at an event in February where for somebody from the Fed was speaking, good guy. And he talked about this. He said, hey, we're not allowed to use this word anymore. Then he said, if you think about it though, tongue in cheek, he said this, which I think is humorous. He said, if you think about it, everything's transitory given a long enough time frame. And I was like, that is such a Fed statement. Well, that's true. I agree with you. And it turns out you and I are studying similar time periods. And you mentioned Jason. Jason's a friend. We're in a couple of things together. He's a good guy and he studies a whole bunch of history too. So I think there's some similar thought processes taking place probably between the three of us. But if you look back in the time frame, the one piece that my question to you on is this. So we've got inflation that looks like early 80s time frame, right? We're pushing, it won't be long. This is reported inflation. It's just under double digits. So real inflation, non-reported is probably double digits, right?
All right.
We're only, let's call it a 30-year fixed interest rate on a house loan. I'm just going to round. Let's call it 5% as of today. Up very heavy in the last 120 days. So that's what our interest rates look like. I'll go back to the 10-year. The 10-year is 285, let's call it. Inflation at 9%. If you go back to the early 80s, inflation at 9% meant the 10-year treasury was probably more at 12%, 13%, and we're sub 3 today. So how do you reconcile that from where we're at today and where you think we're going?
I kind of think in nominal dollar terms, but also I use this example the most. Amazon cannot call the hundreds of thousands of people they've hired in the last 24 months in and say, ha ha, just kidding. It's not $18 an hour. We're going back to 12.
Yep.
They just can't. In Dallas, they were running billboards that said, pick your wage, pick your sign-on bonus, and pick your shift, right? Like, we can't undo that. So what I feel is, Neil, what we've experienced was actually a one-time bullet. It was almost more comparable to the Great Depression and the public works movement and all of that than anything we've experienced in my lifetime or yours. And so I feel like the prudent thing is everybody just needs to cool their jets and wait 12 months. Because what we're going to see is year over year, the increases are not still happening. What we were looking at in fourth quarter last year was 2021 versus 2020. Well, in 2020, no one was working.
Correct.
Like, it's bad. It looks bad. But as an investor, what I focus on is replacement cost. Because my guys, I can't pay them less than I'm paying them right now to show up.
Right.
Lumber prices, my God. I mean, ever somebody was like, oh, it dropped to 900. And it's like, yeah, but that's still 400% higher than it was 3 years ago. So I think there'll be a new normalization, right? I think, like, kind of we created this floor.
Yep.
And I hate to say this, and I keep getting political, but it's not about one party. It's actually just about politicians in general. There's an election. And we live in an instant gratification society where Americans are not willing to be uncomfortable. So I'm predicting, here's the Tim Herridge prediction. We'll call each other in October, see if I was right. I think we go up 50 basis points in the May meeting. Some people are worried about 75. I just don't see that. And then I think in the June meeting, in June, the June CPI reports are like, wait a second, month over month, we're slowing down. Mm-hmm. And then they slow down their rate hikes. Quantitative tightening does continue. And then by the election time frame, it's going to be hey, inflation's leveled out. We've got it under control. It's not growing anymore. Blah, blah, blah. The politicians will take over. We'll get back to 3-4% purchase money for owner ox. And I think this 30-year debt service coverage investor paper, it should normalize in the 4s or the 5s. I don't think it gets back into the 3s like it did last year, which I remember when I was paying 9 in cash flow. And so
correct,
4 or 5 works.
Yeah. So what you're suggesting, if you recall 2-3 years ago, I remember the national conversation surrounding a minimum wage. You know, this was primarily the last election. Bernie was around. It got a lot of conversation surrounding, got to have a livable wage. And somehow $15 an hour became a very significant talking point for a federal minimum wage. You recall that?
Yeah, it was in the State of the Union this year as well.
Yes. Well, it seems to me like we're there. We just got there through an artificial means. Instead of a federal mandate of a law, we injected so much cash in there to pump inflation to an inflation, because everywhere you turn, I mean, every burger joint, there's a whole bunch of them, $12, $13, $14, $15, $17 to flip burgers at a starting wage, right? That is not a federal mandated minimum wage, but is a real marketplace wage, because that's the supply and demand factor for what people are willing to work for at this point.
And if you look at, I like to look at JP Morgan and Wells Fargo and their earnings statements.
Sure.
Savings accounts are per capita are still at an all-time high.
All-time high.
People have this money and they're not letting go of it. Right. And like this, we could talk about this for 7 days. The gig economy has permanently changed the way, I've got a 21-year-old kid out here working in my yard right now. I have to beg him to show up 3 hours a day. Yeah. Because he's now conditioned. He lives with his parents. That's another topic for another day. But when he needs $100 for beer money on Friday night, he just Ubers, Uber Eats or Uber drives or DoorDashes or Grubhubs till he gets $100 and he clocks off. He doesn't have a boss. No one tells him what time to be where, how to dress.
Do you think there's a shift? Every generation has a different things that identify that are standards for them that identifies that generation. Do you think we're at a generation through the, say, the 20 and 30 year olds at this point who are far more focused on lifestyle experience? As a result, it will dramatically impact probably what they do and how they do it from a work standpoint, but also where they live, how they reproduce, what ages will they be having children? Certainly that's shifted. The higher educated the US population has become over decades. Those numbers continue to move back along with the average age in which somebody's married. How do you think that'll impact things?
Yeah, I read last week that for the first time, there's more 65 and older than there is 15 and younger in America. And I read another stat that 47% of males under 30 live with their parents, which I have a 21-year-old son, and I promise you, he'll never live with me again unless like he's on in some sort of intervention type mode, right? I have exposure to that. And I think my wife told me the best. There's been a shift. And now I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but I know when to recognize the shift. So one of the things I'm doing, Neil, and for your listeners, is instead of telling people, hey, be there at 8 and work until 5 and here's your pay, it's changing the way my mind is wired. I have to shift and say, listen, I need this done by that date and I'll give you this much.
Yeah.
I have to let these people, young men, define. Some of them, Neil, I'm telling you, they show up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and then they work until 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And then they stay up all night playing video games and then sleep till 2 o'clock on their mom's couch and get up and do it again the next day. I hope you don't have a lot of millennials listening or I just killed your entire audience. But no, I mean, like, we as service providers, as business people, as professionals, we have to shift along with culture. Otherwise, we just become the grumpy old man in the room talking about the way it used to be.
I've got a question for you. Are you enjoying the podcast? I sure hope you are. And if you are, may I ask you a personal favor? Would you mind going to iTunes and leaving a written review and a 5-star review? If you do that, send me a screenshot to my office. I want to send you back a list as a thank you. It's a list of the top 20 best lists to market to in order to find motivated sellers. This list has been curated by my office over years of direct marketing to sellers. This will either shortcut your path to finding the best list to start marketing to, or it's sure to add to what's already working. You can send that screenshot of your review to marketing@realgritpodcast.com. That's marketing@realgritpodcast.com. Right. I'll play the advocate of the other side here. What does it matter when I get it done? And I'm with you. We run it the same way. And at some point, I'm much like you. I'm in the results business. I came out of being an agent into an investor. And at the end of the day, it's about a result. And sometimes you get the results in a short period of time. Sometimes it takes longer, but we do a project. Listen, it's my contractors. I don't micromanage the contractors, right? When they go remodel the house, hey, it's this day, it's this time, it's that price. And now we've done hundreds at this point with the same guys, and I don't need to babysit them. Right. You just get the right guys and then they're going to get it done. Some jobs are perfect for certain personalities, right? Some things just require, I mean, there's a reason we're doing this versus something else, whatever it may be.
Working in the yard.
Working in the yard, right. Yeah. Some things are best for other folks.
And I think also as an investor, I've had to force myself to accept some of the new differences in pricing and some of the new differences in timelines. Windows, for instance, right? I mean, we are no longer at 13 weeks back ordered. We're down to 10 weeks back ordered. I think, you know, you just have to. Ron LeGrand said on a stage last month, he said, when your head's in the sand, your backside's in the air, and someone's going to come around and kick it. And, you know, that's just the thing, right? Like, we just have to keep our head up and look around and watch what's going on around us.
Yeah. You're spot on. Hey, the comment on this, because I heard it this morning, you touched on it. Let's expand just a little. ARMs are coming back. I just talked to a banker here this morning. He indicated to me that in their mortgage department for owner-occ stuff, they're starting to see five-year ARMs because there's a delta in between that five-year ARM and that 30-year fixed rate. And folks are going, you know what? I think rates are coming down. I'm gonna play that bet over the next 5 years. And I'm going to take the five-year ARM and hope, wish, and pray that rates come down and I'll refinance at some point. Well, what say you?
I mean, look, everyone's different. I think we're seeing a lot of ARMs on inventory that was existing or kind of committed to before February, March.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of investors that we are refinancing, they didn't listen to us, right? We started telling them in January, like, hey, listen, this is not good. Rates are going up.
Right.
Lock it in and go. And now we're at the phase of the refinance cycle where we have customers calling us back, and literally some of them, we were going to be able to get done in the fours in February, and now they're closer to seven.
Right.
And the lender they picked instead of us got them all the way to the closing table, said, you know what? Never mind. We can't do it. File canceled. Goodbye. So we're seeing a lot of ARMs. I'd say it's probably more of an improvisation thing versus a desire. I think a lot of mortgage, I was talking to a buddy of mine with LendingTree. A lot of the mortgage stuff is like people that had already agreed to buy a new build home that was protracted. And now they're just like, they're going to lose their home, or they got to not lose their home like foreclosure, but like they're not going to be able to
close. Right.
Yeah. And they're not going to be able to hit their debt to income ratio. So I think, I mean, that's what my wife and I are looking at doing on some of the houses that we've had under construction that we're going to need to refi. I'm even looking at adding in some interest only strips. Because if I do interest only and the ARM and my cash flow, then these debt service coverage ratio loans, right? The lower your payment, it's just, it all works out. So I think people are going to adapt. And I personally feel like rates come back down, and definitely by, I would say, the first Tuesday of November, 2024. I'm a big fan of human behavior and the Sun Tzu, the art of war, right? Like, election cycles drive everything about America now, especially now that we're so polarized, right? It's you're either left or right, correct, red or blue. You got to pick.
Can't be in the middle anymore, can you?
Yeah. And so I think by November 2024, we're looking at a different picture.
Yeah. Let's move on to the final segment, what I call four for impact.
Four for impact.
Boy, if your word is no good, neither are you. George Herridge said it, your grandfather. What about that resonates with you to this day?
Just the way he said it, I'll never forget exactly where I was when he said it. And it just guides what I mean. There's sometimes that a little white lie may help you out and may make things easier, but it just guides who I am. And I think it's put me in a position that a guy that didn't go to college from rural Texas normally isn't it.
What do you think holds most investors back from hitting their personal next level?
Being willing to fail.
Mm.
I mean, Blackstone, Jazz Cara said it to me one day. We're standing on the corner waiting for a cab. And he looked at me and he said, Tim, we know we cannot be right all the time. As a matter of fact, we know we can only be right 70% of the time. So the key is make more decisions, make them quicker, admit your failures and move on. That still, I probably quote that every week.
That's incredible. Outside of real estate, what are you most passionate about?
Barbecue.
What's the dish of choice? The meat of choice, perhaps?
You know, my wife would tell you that like my white meat, chicken and pork is the best, but I love the brisket because it's a 24-hour challenge that you'll probably do wrong. And it just challenges everything from Aaron Franklin, the best barbecue guy in the world, says brisket barbecue is 1/3 luck, 1/3 skill, and 1/3 the meat you pick.
Yeah.
And I just enjoy it. I enjoy the challenge. It distracts me. It gets me outside and my mind clears. It's my meditation.
I love how you've got you and your wife, the polar opposites. You got the white meat, the fastest meat you could actually do in barbecue, and then you with the 24 hours.
Yeah. Well, the cabana is a fun place to be.
Oh, it's so good. I love it too. Yeah. Last question. What's your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
Probably the greatest joy of my life, other than my wife and my two children, has been being a youth football coach in Rockwall, Texas for the last 15 years. And actually, last year was my last year coaching my youngest son. He's in sixth grade. He starts middle school football. It's bittersweet.
Yeah.
But I've got kids that will be in the NFL next year that I coached when they were little. I've got kids that I watch them every Saturday on TV right now in college football. Jackson Smith was in the college football playoffs as a freshman. It's just so rewarding to see these young kids. And many of them come from great families. Some of them not from good families. Some of them great families with bad situations. And frankly, just to have been allowed to be in a position of influence for those young men when coaches were played a, such a huge life role in my life, it has been very rewarding. I miss it already. And my kids and my wife joke around that I can't wait to have a grandson so I can get back on the field.
Tell me, for the players that you coached who now play on Saturday or will play on Sunday, what's the commonality among them outside of their individual skill set or talent? What's the commonality among them that cuts across all these young men that you confidence?
It's not work ethic. A lot of people say work ethic, but I'm telling you, and I tell these parents all the time, I'm like, give your kid a break, right? Because if he doesn't believe he can do it, he can't do it,
right?
And I'm telling you, I've seen some great talent. John Maxwell wrote another book, Talent is Never Enough, right? I've seen some really talented kids that can't achieve anything because they don't have the confidence. And I've seen some marginally talented young men that their confidence propels them to a level probably even beyond their talent. So it's absolutely confidence and they're willing to make a mistake. So I guess it's also short memories, right? So they're so confident in their ability that even when they make a mistake, they're like, yeah, it's fine. I got it next time, right? Like that's the juice.
That's so good. For folks who want to connect with you, they want to follow you, they just want to connect online, where can they find you? What can they do?
The easiest way is just Tim Herridge. If you learn how to spell it, you can find me at Tim Herridge on Twitter, at Tim Herridge on Instagram, at Tim Herridge on Facebook, and timherridge.com. It's the easiest way to connect.
Perfect. We'll make sure we get all the links placed in the show notes here below. Tim, I really appreciate you coming on, taking the time. You've got a tremendous background in making it through a whole bunch of stuff over the years. I love the story and pretty good perspective on a real perspective on where things are at. You're uniquely situated in the fact that you play in both ponds, meaning from a lender standpoint and from the guy who's out there, you got to put in risk on the line, making deals happen.
Well, man, hey, thanks for having me. I'm kind of excited right now. I feel like I need to go like run or something. I don't know.
I appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. Well, we're going to have to reconnect, come back on, and then let's see how the predictions iron out here as we get on the other side of the election. How about that?
Absolutely, man.
Cool. I appreciate it, Tim. Thanks so much. Hey, for everybody here at Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons reminding that real estate requires real grit. See you next time. If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode.